The highest ranked bear in military history was Wojciech. Adopted in 1942, Wojciech served in multiple battles alongside his fellow Polish soldiers, carrying crates of artillery shells and earning him the rank of corporal. Welcome.
And now, John, is the time where you're supposed to interrupt Rasmus.
Is this when I introduce myself?
Yeah, you can do that as well. So
why do I try? Why do I even bother?
I don't know.
I'm Rasmus.
I like your consistency, though, and I'm red.
I try.
It's funny for us. I enjoy listening to it on the podcast, and it's a special treat to be a part of annoying the shit out of you.
Welcome, John.
Welcome. How the fuck are you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm extremely busy. I'm working a lot, both at the museum where I live, trying to do fundraising and a bunch of stuff in a time of crisis. I'm also trying very hard to keep up with my day job. I don't talk about this a lot, but I do have a day job. I'm not a full-time blacksmith. I am a lead technical writer for the United States Navy, specifically the submarine fleet. So basically my job, I work.
Does that mean you need to translate all of the gargling sounds?
Exactly. Yes. That's okay. A whale. That's a porpoise. That's a guy. I work at a place where it's primarily engineers and mathematicians and physicists and marine biologists all working on submarine technology, and they all have to write papers and publish them. But the reality is that the vast majority of engineers are crap writers.
Yeah.
And so because they are primarily bad writers, someone needs to help them. So the elevator pitch on my job is I translate engineers into English.
Nice.
That sounds pretty difficult, though.
It is in certain cases. I have a couple of authors who, as far as I know, type with their face. And that is challenging. I have a couple of authors that are completely unfamiliar with any punctuation. That takes a little bit of work. But it is interesting work at times. Other times it's pretty dull. But right now it is extremely stressful because I've had to take on the responsibilities for other people. Which is a long way of saying, as people hear me talking about this stuff, they're wondering, why hasn't that guy posted any blacksmithing stuff lately? And the reason is I'm not making it to the shop as much as I want to.
Yeah.
So hoping to change that at some point. But right now it's been a blacksmithing light last few months.
Yeah. That happens. I mean, I've not posted a video in 6 months as well. So sometimes you have to do whatever you have to do and go back to making videos and to your, like, quote unquote, hobbies or side job when you can. Plus, knowing a little bit about scientists and people you're working with, I bet as they are very fun people, they take very lightly and with a big smile all the correction that you can do to their texts. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Oh, they love it when I edit their stuff. They think it's great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I know the feeling. Okay. But we are very happy to have you, John.
Yes.
It's been a long time, and we know you're busy. And so, thanks for joining us tonight, because Jan is out working, probably in a restaurant with clients and having a lot of fun without us. So it's really nice of you for joining us and filling in on a very, very short notice.
I have absolutely no problem being the older replacement Jan.
The accent is a bit off, but apart from that, I think you're doing a good job.
What about you, Raz? How was your week? How are you?
Oh, I'm in the shop all the time now, it feels like. Well, it's
and now you're just bragging.
Yeah, I mean, I have to. It's called counterbalancing. Like one without being in the shop and one not leaving the shop. Yeah. I've been working on some fences for a client that I've been dealing with for a long while, but now I've sort of finally got to the point where I sort of figured out, well, not figured out how to do everything. I just figured out that if I break it down into small enough chunks, it's not so scary anymore.
Yeah.
So I've been setting a few, I was at like a few dozen rivets, but it's more than that. I think I set nearly 150 rivets over the last 2 days.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And I'm making a bit of fence that's supposed to follow the curve of some cobblestones and then go around some trees and then at the same time going up a slight incline.
Okay.
So it's a lot of mathy stuff of trying to make this work and function and be correct. And my brain
is cooked. To do maths, you just put card balls, you cut them, then you use them as a template and you're fine. No.
So what I did is I took some brown craft paper, I rolled that out on the ground, and I sketched out the cobblestones on the graph paper, which solved a lot of problems. But then it's still like, oh, I need to still also account for the angles of thing, because this thing I'm taking is flat and the distance, it's not the same. And yeah, it gets difficult, but it's manageable. And I feel like I've come across one big hurdle in just sort of mentally wrapping my head around how to put all the parts together. Mm-hmm. Up until the point when I realized that, oh, each of these, I'm making two segments, each of them about 3.5 meters long.
Okay.
I realized it's going to be heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buy a forklift. I'm telling you again. Forklift is life. Yeah,
you buy a forklift and see how you fit.
I don't have a shop, by the way. Where would I put
it? You have a garage, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
See? That's stuck true. Your fucking forklift in the garage.
I will.
Just out of spite, and you'll buy from a tiny one from Timo or something. And just
I'm gonna buy a big one, put that in the garage, and when the wife asks me why did I buy a forklift, I will say that's your fault, and you will have to deal with her.
I will deal with that. I will just not come to visit. I will just not acknowledge that the fact that it exists.
Okay, if and I buy one, do you buy stuck. One? If I buy one, do you buy one?
No.
This is the weirdest peer pressure.
Yeah.
If you buy one, I'll buy one.
He's like, if you jump off this bridge, I'll jump off this bridge. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, you're a pussy. Do a flip if you jump. You have to do a flip. Anyway.
How the fuck are you doing, though? What have you been doing in the making this week?
I have.
Do you remember what day it is now?
I'm not sure, but it's recording day. That I know. I've been doing some making. Absolutely, I've been finishing the belts that I was working on, and I've also done the rough editing of the video. So that's a good point. At least, it's been a while since I did the video, and I was happy to get back to it. I would say that I make the difficult decision to change a little bit the style of my videos. For those who have already seen what I do on YouTube, I tend to sync a video with the music. Mm-hmm. So every time there's a change in the music, in the rhythm or whatever, or every like five pulses, most of the time it's four, I change the video, I change the plan and the interesting thing for me doing that is to keep a certain rhythm in the video, and so people watching the video are not bored, and I can show more details and different point of views and stuff like that. So I'm still doing that, doing a lot of changes in where the camera is and zoom in, zoom out, and everything to explain exactly what I'm doing. But syncing the video with the music takes so much time that I'm going to try for the next, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 videos to not do that, to see if it helps with the editing process, because it's a very long process.
Yeah.
And therefore, if I can save some time doing so, I will probably be more inclined to go back to editing and to make more videos. Because it's been a while. Last one was like probably 6 months ago. And when you invest a week of your time doing a video and you don't get any views at all or barely any views, you are not very motivated to do another one. So if I can save a little bit of time and spend less time doing a video, making a video, I don't even care if I don't make that many views, because the ratio views and time invested is not that dramatically. It's not that big difference. So I'm trying to get back to it. And yeah, so that's been part of my week. But also the kid is on vacation this week again because France. So
yeah, he seems to be almost more on vacation than at school.
Yeah, no, almost. I mean, you know, yeah, France, you know, 7 weeks of school and 2 weeks of holidays, and then again, 7 weeks of school and yet again, 2 weeks of holidays. That's the general pattern in France.
Okay.
When they are older, it's like 12 weeks at school and then 2 weeks of holidays and yeah. Mm. But that's a general idea, which is so it's a good thing that I'm working from home because I can take care of the kid instead of being someone to take care of the kid when they are in vacation. But also it means that I want to spend time with the kid, play with the kid, and also we do the homework together. So I've been doing a lot of homework recently, which is fine because I'm still at the right level to teach everything that he needs to learn for now. Probably will be probably different when he will be in high school. But anyway, for now, I'm fine. So yeah, I'm trying to enjoy the holidays as well. Making, but not that much of making, just a little bit, just enough to keep my motivation high.
Can I pest you though? Have you looked into the knife sheets yet?
It's still in the back of my head. It's still okay, working okay. Like in a background app. no, I'm doing stuff in sometimes. Okay. I have an idea of at least one that I really want to do.
You have no fucking clue, do you?
No, I have. I so, yeah, you're not wrong. But I need to make four.
It's so, in
four,
the mold file. That's where it is. It's in yeah. The mold file.
Yeah.
All the other things that are kind of deteriorating at the back yeah. of your brain. And exactly. And I say that because I also have a mulch pile in my brain.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of working on it. So for those who don't know, Raz and I will be doing a collaboration about so obviously Raz made the knives, and I'm gonna make the sheath. And I received the knives like 10 days ago. And they are beautiful and very sharp. I'm going to make a different sheath for them. So I'm thinking of four different type of sheaths.
Oh.
And I have one was, what is decided. I know what I'm going to do with one, but as I want to make them different and kind of like not custom, because we're not going to ask the people who are going to buy the knives what they want, but I want them to be different enough to be like custom-like things, if you know
singular
what I mean.
Singular pieces.
Yeah, unique. Exactly. Like unique pieces. Exactly. That's what I was forgetting. So yeah, one is very clear in my head. The three other ones, not so much, not yet. Mm. But I'm working on it, and that's the kind of project that requires some time. Like you have the idea, and you need to digest a little bit the idea. Let it come to you for a creativity to be on a rendezvous. How do you say that in English, John? Like there's a rendezvous French word that we use, but I'm not sure how you use it in English. Like when it was, yeah, don't worry, forget it. I'm tired. It will happen. Let's put it that way. It will happen. It's gonna be fine. Don't worry, Raz. I'm working on it. But
okay, I'm very
yeah,
excited.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait for me to begin. Like. It's gonna be nice. It's gonna be nice. Don't worry.
I am also excited. That sounds like it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch you do.
I hope so.
To yeah, watch Red suffer through it, you mean?
No, I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering anymore. Not yet. No. Making a knife sheath is fine. It can be. It's something that I know. It's not something new that I need to learn. That's your cue.
You got a tick? What's happening to your eye?
When I wink, it's the sign that you need to do the.
The problem was that you were winking with the eye hidden behind your cap.
Yeah, sorry. So.
That better not. Yeah,
it was more obvious.
less like a wink and more like a fit. I was like, is Red okay? Do we need to call someone?
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I don't have to learn the process. That's something I've done multiple times in the past. So that's going to be fine. I just want to be like, I don't want to say spot on, because you never know when you're spot on with creativity. When you're spot on when something that you do on your own, it can only be the judgment of someone just saying, oh, it was spot on. You did it like right. But that's the idea. That's what I would like to reach, like making a sheath that goes well with the knife that you made, Raz, because they are really nice. So I want that the aesthetic of the sheath and the aesthetic of the knife like go well together. So it's kind of the obvious rendezvous. Yeah, that's the way I wanted to use it between leather and steel. And I'm done. So do we have a topic?
Well, it was something to do with you having a tick, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Twofold. One was sort of just that, as you mentioned, a bit of that learning thing, like how we go about acquiring knowledge. Mm-hmm. But then also I had that realization early in the week of, and it's something I keep rediscovering, but it's like, if you just keep breaking things down into smaller and smaller parts, then suddenly it becomes so much more easier to deal with.
Yeah.
And it's easier to see the relation between things. Like with the fencing I'm working on, I need to make this really big thing to follow all of these curves, but I'm like, no, I need this bit that has the incline to follow this curve, and I need this bit that is more straight to just follow this curve.
Yeah.
And because the magic of the wire steel metal glue gun with fire, because that's important, I can just stick those parts together. And then suddenly I didn't have to do the whole big thing. I can just do two smaller things that I can wrap my head around without frying or something. That was part of it. With that sort of, I keep rediscovering how beneficial it is to just look at a problem and try to break it down.
Is that something that you can always do, though?
I mean, I would say so.
I'm going to say, I mean, I'm sure there is potentially an exception out there, but 90% of the time or more, most learning tasks can be broken down to discrete steps.
Yeah.
That can be learned one by one and then layered on top of that. And after that, it becomes a matter of practice.
When it comes to learning, I'm absolutely, I do agree with you, but when it's something that you have to do, and I remember when I used to do some translation, it's not exactly the same job that you are doing, John, because you are more like editing a text that was already written and make it comprehensible for everyone. I remember that you can just break down the text into small chunks and just take one phrase at the time and translate it, but you need to keep in mind that there has to be some kind of global sense in the text has to be logical. It has to make sense in the end. And so, is that the same way for you for the text you're working on a daily basis? Is that something that you can break down and like correct a bit in the morning, in the afternoon, the next day, and doesn't really matter? Or do you have to read the entirety of the text beforehand and then understand what the author needs to or wants to transmit and take that into consideration when you are editing your text?
So when I edit, and God, I know this is just going to be scintillating, but when I edit a publication, you know, I do multiple passes in order to learn about what I am editing. And the first pass is going through and taking care of the formatting and styles. So it is making sure that the headings look correct, are the right font, are the right size, et cetera, et cetera. The captions are correct. The images are formatted correctly. And then the next time when I get to the end of that, I go right back up to the top of the document and I do And then I just read the document on a proofreading level. So I am reading the document, and the only thing I am fixing is misspellings, obvious comma errors, you know, all of the grammar and punctuation and bad spelling and whatever else might be there. And then I get to the end of the document, and I've corrected the spelling, the grammar, all of that. And then I go right back up to the top of the document again. And now I look at it in terms of organization of information. Because the problem with a lot, and this is a problem with learning from people who are so good at something that they think of it from their brainstem. They no longer know how to talk about it in steps. And so with a lot of the people I edit for, they are so smart about the topic they are talking about, they forget that dumber people, you know, like me, are going to read it. And I can see, okay, we need to move this around. We need a better introduction. You're using a bunch of jargon that people don't understand. So we either need to get rid of that jargon or define it. And then when I get to the end of that, you know, now after that, I'm just polishing.
Okay.
But it is a matter of going through in those discrete, those phases, those passes. And that is what, you know, because I am I'm the lead technical editor at my work, and I teach other editors how to do this.
Yeah.
Well, so after that, you know, I teach the editors how to do that. And then I give them a document, and they, if they've been paying attention, they do exactly what I told them to do, and they still make a bunch of mistakes because they're beginners. And I will say to them exactly what I say to my blacksmithing students when something goes all banana shaped. I will say, you know why this isn't working out for you? And why? You're a beginner. Yeah. You're supposed to suck at this. So you're just doing it until you say, and you're not going to reach a point blacksmithing or editing. You're not going to reach a point where suddenly you've like crossed this massive chasm and you've gone from somebody who sucks at something to an expert.
I think what you said is important. Like, you are teaching other people to do your job. And I know that when you teach someone and you keep in mind that the person you are teaching to knows absolutely nothing about the subject that you are teaching them, the way you teach changes. You don't teach the same way to a first year student or to a fourth year student. They don't know the same amount of stuff about the subject, therefore the way you speak to them, because you're supposed to take into consideration what they are supposed to know or what they actually know, therefore the way you speak to them is going to be different. So the people you are like editing the text of are very specialized in their job, and they are using a language and any kind of expression that are very like attached to their job.
Yeah.
And they need you to make it like more accessible to like non-specialist people, but they have probably lost this idea of I'm talking to someone who knows absolutely nothing about the subject, and therefore you can't learn from those people directly because they are not using the right vocabulary, or they are jumping steps and they are not mentioning stuff because that you don't know, because they think you know as much as they do, which is the dumbest way of trying to teach someone. So
Is that what they call the curse of knowledge? The fact that you know something means you are almost unable to visualize a world where you don't no longer know that thing.
Maybe. I don't know how it's called, but yeah, probably, yeah. Can do a quick research on Google if you want.
Well, it wouldn't. I mean, if it is called that, that wouldn't be a bad name for it. But I mean, I don't think... So, like I said, certain people who are very knowledgeable about a thing can teach it. Yeah. Like, you know, I know I can teach someone how to edit a document. And I've taught enough blacksmithing classes now where I know I can teach someone to swing a hammer at hot metal and not hurt themselves at the very least. But I've really, I mean, there is, you know, unfortunately for those people, there are certain people out there who are so they do this thing from their lizard brain to such a degree that they either cannot, or it just makes them angry. I've seen people get angry because they like a guitar teacher I knew who wound up, I mean, he was a phenomenal player, but he wound up with a student just yelling at this kid because how can you not know how to do this? And the kid was like, because I've never held a guitar before, you asshole. you know, yeah. It was kind of neither of their faults because the guy who was trying to teach, he couldn't actually break it down. He was that knowledgeable. He'd learned to play when he was a kid. So it was all really lizard brain level stuff. Whereas, you know, it is almost an advantage if you become masterful at a thing a little bit later in life, because you had to learn it at a time in your life when it's hard to learn new things.
Yeah.
You're right, Raz. After a quick Google research,
that's exactly this is going on the calendar now.
Yeah, so it's the phenomenon of being biased because you don't recognize that other people don't have the same amount of knowledge that you have. And I think there is we are taking knowledge or learning from the teacher's point of view now at the moment. I think there is a great way to know if you are teaching right, and it's the same like foundation of the John's story. Try to teach to a 10 years old or a 7 years old or a 5 years old, anything. If you don't get mad, like crazy mad, because you don't have this feeling of how can't you know that you're on the right path. It's the good way of teaching. If you still have this anger in you, or like, why don't you know that thing? Why don't you understand that thing? And you'll start to get mad. Well, teaching is not for you, and you're definitely doing it wrong. Because you can't yell at a kid for not knowing something that he's trying to learn, right? Yeah. Try to teach English to a 5 years old English boy or girl. Try to teach mathematics to 8 years old for the first time, like divisions and fractions and whatnot. You have to be very patient. You know the stuff, but you also have to acknowledge that it's the first time for them, that their brain doesn't work the way your brain work. What age you are doesn't really matter, but you've been familiar with what you're trying to teach for years. So it's like it's just like drinking a glass of water now. You know how to do it without spilling the water. You know how to make fracking.
So, you would be surprised.
Yeah, I know. Not talking about you specifically.
Oh, but okay.
In general. Sorry. Okay, sorry.
I use the old sippy cup all the time.
Trying to teach to a kid is a very good exercise because it always forces you to break it down into smaller pieces, to be very logical, to take into consideration what the kid actually knows and doesn't. So and if something is lacking, you can take a break from the main subject. Quickly teach what's needed to understand the main subject and then go back at it. And the kids will follow because they have incredibly fast brains and they can understand so much you don't even understand that. Because now we are old, or let's say older, we have lost this ability to stay 8 fucking hours a day sitting on a chair listening to a boring teacher trying to teach us French, English, mathematics, physics, what the animals are, or whatever.
That's a different conversation. I don't think anyone is made or in a state of where they can do that, and, unless they are actually catatonic.
No, no, I'm not talking about willingly doing it. I'm talking about the pure capacity of the brain to absorb that amount of knowledge a day and not die.
No, I'll still fight you for it, but okay, move on.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think we are made to do so. It's just the way it works. It's just how a school is done all over the world. And that's a shame, because that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
But I mean, I survived. I'm not that fucked up. But for different reasons. For different reasons, obviously. I mean, it's doable. If it wasn't, it would be Idiocracy, the movie, like everywhere. It's turning into that, but it's not yet, at least. So the brain have this capacity of staying focused for a very, very long time, not getting tired like at once, because it just got a new information that it need to digest. It can just sort out the information that are relevant, irrelevant, worthy to be kept or forget, like the other one that needs to be forgotten. Everything happens during sleep, but this capacity of the brain to just take all these stimuli and keep what is needed for survival first and for skills afterwards. It's just incredible. So yeah, that was my point. Sorry.
So I think the superpower of children learning is the fact that the vast majority of them, and I think this starts to go away in the teens, but sub-teens, the vast majority of them do not care if they suck.
Yeah.
Like they have full knowledge, because, you know, a little kid is walking around being a beginner at everything. So they don't mind being a beginner at learning whatever you're trying to teach them. Whereas at a certain point, and like I said, I think it starts somewhere at the early teens, maybe a little bit before, all of a sudden your kid who doesn't mind that they suck suddenly develops a sense of pride.
Yeah, exactly.
And very often pride is the death of learning, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. My kid was reading today, because he has to read a book during the holidays and present the book in front of the whole classroom next week. And he chose Harry Potter, the second book. So it's a big, big book. I don't know how many pages, but around 500 pages, right? So in order to be sure that he read every single word of the book, because that's the assignment, we make him read this book out loud, so we can check what he's actually doing and if he's reading right, if he doesn't make mistake, if he's stumbling on a few words, it's probably because the words are new, so we can explain the word and correct him and so on and so on. But he gets mad at himself because he thinks he's too slow. So definitely has this pride of, I want to be better. I should be better at reading. And even though we are like, that's a difficult book for you. It's the first book that big, that difficult that you have ever had to read on your own. We've read him book that difficult, that big, but it was like the bedtime stories. That's the first time he does that on his own and for a school assignment. So that's difficult for him, but he has this pride. And this pride, as you said, John, I think it's the death of learning, because if we don't get rid of that pride when we are adults, considering the fact that we are learning something new, that we are going to suck at it at first, and don't put that pride aside recognizing, yes, I'm a beginner. Yes, I'm going to suck. Yes, every day I'm going to improve myself till the day I'm going to be good enough to get back that sense of self-esteem and push that pride back into us to get even better than we are at that time. We're doing it wrong, I think.
Something that I will very often say to one of my blacksmithing students, if, you know, and typically in not all, but in almost all of my classes, there is that student who is really just struggling. Mm-hmm. And not getting it, and for whatever reason, it's not clicking. And, you know, and sometimes they don't care, in which case I don't really need to do much except keep, you know, showing them. And but sometimes they really care a lot, and they start getting very frustrated. And what I will typically say is something along the lines of, so listen, here's the deal. Today, you're blacksmithing, and that means you're more awesome than everybody out there who is not blacksmithing. Like, you're in a hot room, like standing over fire, hitting, you know, hot metal with a hammer. You've never done this before. This is an ancient skill. This is a hard thing to do. So it doesn't matter if you're struggling, you're still, like, you're being more adventurous and more awesome than the people across the road who are sitting in a cafe drinking a, you know, a $6 coffee.
That's so true.
You're getting way more interesting burns.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that is, you know, at the beginning of my class, I typically say, if you're a hand model, you need to leave now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having been with you in the workshop, John, a couple of times, and also having that interesting experience of watching you teach and then having you watch me teach.
Yep.
It is really fascinating, the dialogue we had shortly after that, of how different our styles are, but still how we manage to get people across the finish line.
Right.
Mm. And there are, like, no quote unquote wrong or correct way of teaching, but there are some fundamentals that needs to be there.
Right.
Maybe not the right way to teach, but definitely there are wrong ways to
teach. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. Because, like, it needs to be, you need to adjust how you speak and how you communicate to the level of your students.
Yeah.
And when you're teaching adults, like, some things you kind of take for granted, like just basic geometry, how to measure things and divide and plus and add up and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm teaching. I have been teaching the same class using the same numbers for years now.
Yeah.
So a lot of those numbers I remember. I don't necessarily do the math anymore. Mm-hmm. I just remember what the numbers add up to be.
Yeah.
Which looks really cool when you can just rattle them off on the top of your head.
Yeah.
But then I've also been teaching a 10-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was explaining things and I sort of had to stop myself and just, like, hold on. When did I learn these things in school? And have to talk to him. And I was like, okay, have you learned this yet? Like, because one thing, I don't remember when I learned it. The other thing, the curriculum has changed a fair bit since I was in school, especially at his level.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, okay, but what do you know? And then take it from there and add on, like you said, sort of sidetrack the whole class a little bit and go like, cool, okay, you know about right angles. You know how they add up to get to 180 degrees and all that. Cool, let's move on from there. And do all of that sort of vague stuff and how just, which is also unnecessary at some point, sort of teaching how to calculate the mass of steel in the piece you have, or rather how much you need to stretch out a taper of this size. Like, it is really unnecessary to teach someone that in the beginning, but I think it is an important concept to have an understanding of the fact that you can learn and understand this.
Have you noticed that question, have you learned that at school?
Mm.
Is only something that you ask to kids. You never ask the question to an adult.
Oh yeah, because if the adult didn't learn it at school or don't remember learning it at school, I assume they're stupid.
That's the problem.
But I never assume a kid is stupid.
Yeah, you don't assume that a kid is stupid. You only assume that he has seen that at school, in school, or not yet, and he will at some point, because it's considered as basic knowledge. If you would ask the question, like additions and multiplication and division, it's like, yeah, have you seen that at school? No, okay, so I'm going to explain that quickly to you, because you need that for whatever you are doing. But to a grown-ass man or woman, you would ask, do you know how to calculate fractions, for example? You would either look very stupid or expect that the person you're asking the question to get angry. Because again, it's considered as basic knowledge, which is not. I've met people who can't read. I've met people who sucks at taking care of their own body, like hygiene stuff. Because I've been in the army, met a lot of guys coming from the mountains, and their job was only taking care of ships all day long. They couldn't take a shower every day. They couldn't shave every day. So when they arrive in the army and they are like, "Oh, you're gonna shower after doing sports and you're gonna shave every morning to be just like presentable," they are like, "What the fuck? What do I need to do?" They had no idea. Okay, so this quote unquote basic knowledge of taking care of their own body was something like very new to them. Same is reading. I've met people who have never been to school, so they don't know how to read. They don't know how to make to do the simple math in a different style, but or genre. Some people really sucks at being social. They don't know the rules of how to deal with other people, how to greet people, how to be polite with people. So all of that, which is considered as basic knowledge, is not necessarily basic knowledge for everyone. And yet we don't ask the question because for us it's obvious. So this curse of knowledge, as we were talking about like earlier, it's not something that is only for very specific knowledge about, like, I don't know, rocket science or medicine or whatever. It can be with like very basic stuff that we all take for granted. That's true. We need to take that into consideration as well when we are talking to people. Like, we talk about Facebook and TikTok all the time, but I know people who don't have a cell phone, so they don't have the any clue of what those apps are, or because they are too old, or because they are too young. So there's always this adaptation that we have to remind us to do of, hey, careful, you have a certain amount of knowledge, like personally, but the people you are dealing with, the people you are talking to, they don't necessarily have the same. So just be polite, be cautious, and just don't suppose that they know the same thing, because probably don't. Quick question for you two guys, if I may. Raz, you talked about teaching when you were with John. Did you teach the same class?
No.
Not the same students then?
No.
No, no. Okay. There was none of the same students, I think.
Nope, there were none of the same students. So Rasmus taught a more advanced knife-making class. I TA'd for him on that, and then I taught a bottle maker, a bottle opener course, which was an absolute beginner course, 3 hours. So Rasmus's course was 2 days long, and more advanced. Mine was 3 hours for absolute beginners. So they were very different, both in terms of scope, subject matter, and the knowledge of the students.
Okay, I'm asking that because when you have the same, if you had the same class, it would have been interesting to have your feedback about how you felt teaching that specific class. If you had some troubles with some student and how you dealt with it, or how you dealt with the hurdles that they met during the class. You're very different. Your amount of knowledge is probably different. You are different age. So it would have been interesting to compare the way you dealt with the issues that the class had during the classes. But that's fine.
I think you can oversimplify it and break down like three major issues people have when they get into blacksmithing.
Yeah.
Either is they are not strong enough to translate their intention into manipulation into steel.
Mm-hmm.
They're too strong and they can't adjust their strength. So mm-hmm. everything just goes flat.
Mm-hmm.
And or they struggle with the concept of how to move the steel. Because I've had people who are not strong enough, but they can accurately describe back to me what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have people who just know how to hit things really hard and they have their eye-hand coordination, but they have no of the finer motor skills to angle the hammer to get the shape they want. And then they have the sense of form after that, like, how do I need to hit this to actually bend it or to make the shapes and use the edge of the anvil and like those conceptual shaping things, if that makes sense.
It is a little bit stunning to me how many students I have who will come into the class and like if they need to make a taper and they don't understand why the metal is longer once the taper is completed, because they think that blacksmiths, we're not redistributing metal into mm-hmm. a different shape. They think we are compressing the metal into a shape, at which point I will have to, you know, explain to them. So compressing metal is a superpower.
Yeah.
It's not blacksmithing. It is an actual like physics defying superpower. And that is not what I'm teaching today. I'm teaching blacksmithing. So when you hit metal, it's got to go somewhere. And all blacksmithing is controlling where the metal goes.
My second question to you two guys was this one. With everything that we have said, with everything that you know about teaching, with everything that you know about learning, how do you learn something new now for yourself? Not teach to a student, but learn. Is learning something that you are reluctant to do because you know it's going to take time, it's going to be difficult, you're going to have to break it down into smaller pieces? Or is that something that you are attracted to, that you do something like willingly on a daily basis, on a regular basis? How do you deal with learning something new?
I think it goes back to something John said earlier on, like if you have too much pride, you can't learn because you're too afraid of looking foolish or making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it is very much that having the intention of, I will fuck up, I will make mistakes, I will look stupid, and realizing that is a necessary part of the learning process.
I don't agree with you, like looking stupid. You don't look, I mean, from my point of view, you don't look stupid because you're learning something new and fucking it up. You're one of the few person that I know who's constantly trying to improve himself and learn something new. Just before the podcast, we tried a new app to record the podcast in better condition. That's not something that someone would have tried if they had not the intent of improving what they are doing and know more and acquire more skills.
Well, because I know, I mean, it's two part. It's that old meme of the guy on the beach shouting like, look, he's trying something new and he's feeling really insecure about it.
Yeah.
And then like, see, nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's that meme, like all the time. Like I'm both sitting inside of my own head, starting to feel insecure and afraid of all of that, and knowing that nobody else cares.
So looking stupid to whom, exactly?
Well, everybody who might be looking.
Well, but nobody's looking. That's
the
point.
Exactly. But you are afraid of looking stupid for those who are looking.
But then realize nobody's looking. Yeah.
But that both nobody is looking, and if someone were looking, they don't care.
Yeah.
So here is potentially the issue, which is... you know, we've been talking a lot about the methods of learning and not a lot about the psychology of it. And the fact that for some people, like, you know, I will say I am, if I want to learn a new thing, there are certain things that I am intimidated by. And I don't quite have the same ability to just jump into it both feet, like say Rasmus does, and I have to get over that. And even though, like, when you're asking Rasmus, you know, if you're alone in the shop and doing something new, who do you look stupid for? And the answer to that question for a lot of people is me. It's myself. I am my own worst critic. And when I was way, you know, long time ago when mastodons walked the earth and I was in college, you know, I had a screenwriting teacher who would talk about this in terms of the shitbird. And the shitbird sat on your shoulder and basically just talked into your ear and said, you're not good enough to do this. You can't learn new things. You're stupid to even try this. And a lot of people, including myself, have a shitbird. And so when you're trying to learn new things, the first task isn't, okay, how do I learn how to use a welder? It is shutting up the shitbird. And then you can start to take a class, experiment with material, whatever step one of the thing is. So there is a whole psychology behind it as well in terms of how adventurous or self-defeating you might be.
Yeah, there is this episode title that we wrote down in Notion a long time ago. And if I remember correctly, your ego will kill you. We still haven't recorded that episode, but I really want to do it at some point. And it's one of the things that are on my list to talk about in this episode. Like the shitbird is your first enemy. It's your worst enemy. And this shitbird is your ego. You have no pride in when you start doing something, when you start learning something, you don't have the pride for any kind of result. You're not expecting any kind of result. You can be hoping for stuff, but this hope of reaching a certain level or having a certain result the first time you try something, it's not pride, it's your ego. And if you're not reaching that thing, that result, you're going to be deceiving yourself, and therefore your ego will be bruised, and then you will just give up and all of that. So yeah, hitting the bird or shutting down your ego is the very first thing you need to do. I think there's certain type of person, of people who can do that very easily. Sometimes it's way harder to just like overcome this bad feeling, and they are still hearing the bird like, hey, you're gonna fail, why even try? But there is a lot of fun in trying. There's a lot of fun in learning stuff. But what's the next step? When you've done that, what's the next step? I personally tend to tackle a big project, a difficult project, a huge mountain to climb. Because in my fucked up head, doing so, I'm going to learn way more than just trying to climb a small rock. How do you do that? Is that step by step? Do you break down like the mountain into stages, or what's the process for you?
Well, for me, I don't do that. That is a me thing, which is if I'm looking at something like learning a new thing, I would much rather like take a much more scaled down thing and say, okay, so I know, you know, if my ultimate goal is this big thing, then I will take a small chunk of that and see, can I complete a smaller project using the elements of this larger project? That way I can finish a thing and be perhaps somewhat reasonably, acceptably successful for me, and get like a little win out of it. And if I can get, because again, there is a psychology component to this, because if I dive in, for me personally, if I try to dive into the 70 foot of railing going up a spiral staircase or the 15 foot wide forged chandelier, I am going to frustrate myself. I am going to wind up getting angry at myself. I just know that's how I am, as opposed to if I'm like, you know what, instead of 70 feet of railing going up a spiral stair, maybe these three steps outside the side door of my house needs a new railing, and I'll do that.
And isn't getting frustrated or mad at yourself part of the learning curve at some point?
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you're learning something, you're never going to be thrilled with all of your results. But there is, you know, I think certain people have a higher or lower tolerance for failure, so to speak, in those beginning stages. So me personally, I need to give myself like incremental wins.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to go home and say, well, you know, as opposed to it's the 15th day of fucking everything up on this 20-foot wide chandelier that, and how I, you know, and there does, I mean, most people have a point where they're just like, you know, failure fatigue is not something you want to combat. I just need to come up with like discrete smaller wins and then take the skills from that smaller win and apply it to something a little bit larger. I don't know if that's the right way to do it. I don't know if that's the wrong way to do it. To a certain degree, everybody has to customize their learning to themselves, because it is, if there wasn't a psychology component to this, then it would be machine learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Rice? How do you do it?
I'm very much, at least to this extent I'm able to, I very much prefer to break it down into parts and practice those.
Yeah.
But of course, depending, that is very easy when you know all the steps of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Like me now working up towards making swords, I know that I have a fairly good grasp of all of the things needed to make that sword complete.
Mm-hmm.
But only when it comes to the blacksmithing, not when it comes to making the sheath of it.
Yeah.
Because I've never done that style of edge protection on something before. Mm-hmm. So that's more of a black box. I know I need to end up with something that has this function and vaguely this shape, kind of, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes to forging the sword itself, it's very easy, and that's what I've been doing, to just start with knives and just make them longer and longer and longer.
Sure.
Try to adhere to the geometry required as they get longer. I mean, I don't have the ambition yet of forging a lot of Schweihänder, like the large two-hand swords. But if I need to go that far, then suddenly the scale of it makes it so different that you need to consider whole other things. Like as the knife gets longer, when you bring it up to temperature for hardening, it will sag under its own weight unless you handle it correctly. You need to hold it and move it in a specific way so it doesn't bend just from like lack of momentum as you swing it around.
I have
done that myself on smaller knives. I have seen other people do that where they yank it and I can see it as it goes into the oil that now it has a curve sideways to it because you move too fast. Or if you hold it on the flat, it will just droop down because there's no structural integrity that way. But that's also things you need to fuck up before you kind of realize that's an issue.
And that is so there is a little bit of a side commentary there on knowing whether or not you have the right tools to learn a thing. And that is a whole other thing in terms of if you're going to make a two-handed sword, you need different tools than making a boning knife.
Yeah. Something is easily done by hand. The other thing is very difficult to do by hand. How about for you, Red? What sort of... How do you go about this?
I tend to choose a very difficult project in order to learn something new. And therefore, I'm prepared. I know that the learning curve is going to be very different compared to me breaking down that big project into smaller pieces. When you do so, you tend to have like a regular progression and you learn new stuff every day and you have small successes like on a regular basis. And therefore your self-esteem is not completely shattered by your constant failure until you succeed. Knowing that I can manage my stress and my time and my energy in a better way and know that if, for example, I was to tackle like the 20 feet chandelier that John was talking about on the 20th day, I wouldn't give up because I would know that with two more days of work, it would be done. But you have to go through this first 26 days, 27 days of nothing is moving forward. I'm fucking everything up. It doesn't look like much. Or I'm failing at this, I'm failing at that. But that's part of the learning process for me. So that's okay, knowing that in the end, I would have reached the wanted result. I would have learned probably even more than when I break the project down into smaller chunks. But that's just where my function. That's the way my brain works.
I have a realization, if I might jump in.
Sure.
The way you are able, not mentally able to learn, but how you can allow yourself to learn, I think also is dependent on how critical the final result is.
Yeah.
Because yes. If failure is very much an option and you accept that from the beginning, doing something super ambitious can teach you a whole lot really quickly, but you might not have anything to show for it.
Yeah.
And I realized that's kind of the opposite of why I'm doing the incremental steps to work up to the sword, because I can't afford to spend a whole month only trying to learn how to make swords without having anything to show for it.
Yeah.
But spending 6 months making larger and larger knives and more sword-shaped objects, yeah, and then be able to sell them along the way, that's certainly a whole lot easier.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I buy that.
Oh, you will? Cool, I have one. Just
I need to not use those words. Any podcast with Rasmus.
No, that's actually a very, very good point that you have, Ras, because you are working. You're self-employed and you are working every day. So you need to make money. You need to make new stuff to sell. And you need to show what you are doing in order to create some kind of, I don't remember what's the word when you have a portfolio. Is that that used in English as well?
That's okay. The word.
Yeah, cool. If you don't do so, like one of my biggest, like, looking at that word, pride as a leather worker is my black armor that I made from Skyrim, the Nightingale armor. Took me a few weeks to do that. But at the time, I was not on the socials. I was not showing my work to anyone. I had all the time in the world to do it. I was working my full-time job as a teacher and it was only a hobby. So it didn't really matter that it took me that long because it was only for me and I just wanted to do it right. If I had to, as I'm going to soon do it, make another set of armor, I have two options. One is showing all my progress like on a daily basis on the social in order to entertain the people and to keep them interested in what I'm doing and maybe potentially find a client at the end that would buy the thing. Or show like I'm doing at the moment on social, show nothing to no one for a few weeks and just come up with the final product. And say, oh, it's done. I can now show you how I've done it because I've documented it and I'm making a YouTube video or Instagram reel or whatever. But the way I approach the thing is very different. It's like showing the small progress or showing the big mountain at the end that I finally finished climbing, right? So to me, doesn't really matter now. And your way of doing it, Raz, is very sensible and very logical, because you can progress, learn, acquire new skills, but still make products that you will sell in the end, hopefully, and make money along the way.
I also want to point out that he used my name and sensible in the same sentence.
Yeah, which is very unusual, and my mouth still hurts. But anyway,
I chose to ignore that.
Thank you, Jen.
I'm afraid that you will make some soundbite out of that.
Hopefully. No, but I don't think there is a good way or a bad way to do it. I think it depends so much on who you are, how you work, how you prefer to work, how your brain works, but also what kind of situation are you in. Like, it wouldn't make sense for me to. I mean, both options are good for me. I can just show the final product because it's one set of armor. I'm not making chunks of that set of armor that I can sell along the way, as you, Raz, are making knives as practice pieces. Yeah. Even if it's not practice pieces, but you learn how to make a big sword making longer knives every day or every week, right? Mm. You can sell those knives, and it helps you to reach your goal, which is how to learn to make a sword in the end. I have nothing to sell in my process for this set of armor. So to me, it doesn't really matter which one I choose, like showing or not showing until it's all done. I think it's the exact same thing when it comes to learning. You can do it bit by bit if that's the way you learn and you do things, like if that process is suits you better, that's totally fine. And if you want to tackle the big mountain and climb it with me, that's fine as well. But you have to be prepared to the fact that the learning curve is not going to be the same. The success are not going to be the same. The way you will have to deal with your ego and your victories or failure is not going to be the same. So it's really up to you and we are as a human beings, to speak.
Is that something to focus on?
Probably, yes.
Again, with the tics you have, it's really weird.
Yeah, I swing my finger or close my eyes.
You might need to get that checked out.
Yeah, I will. I'm seeing my doctor tomorrow. I won't, but yeah. Can I start?
Yes, okay.
I'm a big kid, and when I was a younger kid, there was this TV show that I really liked, and I probably talked about it in the podcast already. It was Saint Seiya, like the knights fighting with armors, and the armors were based on zodiacal stuff. Like, it was a Japanese anime, came into France at the end of the 80s, probably. So Saint Seiya, yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with it. But anyway, all the people or guys of my generation in France and probably in Europe, I've seen this show. I've pretended to be one of these knights. I have the kind of power and fight that way. And I stumbled upon that guy who's, I believe, is Italian, and he's called Caio Pantoja, I think. We'll put the name and the links in the stuff, but he's actually making real armors, steel armors, from the show. And first of all, it's not easy because it doesn't really make sense all the time. Like, the way you can move with those, they are not designed to be practical. They are not designed to be worn by human beings. It's just a TV show. It's not just like a mangaka that made the thing up in his head and then draw it on paper and made it on TV afterwards. It's like, doesn't really need to be like wearable, right? But this guy is making them, and it's absolutely fantastic. It's a real difficult job, and it's his work is just incredible. So yeah, if you want to give him a follow, I'm sure he'll appreciate it, and it will pay for all his artwork. So yeah, Caio Pantoja, also known as K-Maker on TikTok and other socials.
Okay, cool. John, you want to go?
So sure, I'm actually going to do something that is a little bit on topic, because one of the things that I have been working on learning is sketching. And my strategy with this, you know, because it is something that I used to do a long time ago and I was fairly good at it. And I was a little self-conscious about going back to it because I knew I would suck. So what I decided is I said, well, this is something I don't have to do. I don't have to show to anyone. This is for me. Mm-hmm. So I've just been, this is something that I enjoy doing and I don't show it to anybody. I've been working on it for some time now and I feel absolutely no guilt or anything about keeping it entirely. It is my thing. I own it. But yeah. Somebody who I have been learning from on YouTube, who is a fantastic concept artist who focuses on creatures and monsters, is Bobby Rebholz. And it is Bobby, R-E-B-H-O-L-Z. And his YouTube channel is Draw Sessions, drawing creatures and stuff. And I love his art. I love how he draws monsters and creatures, but he also teaches a lot as well on his channel, and he gives up all the goods in a lot of ways, which I really appreciate. So if you are someone who just likes monsters and creatures and kind of weird, grotesque looking things from Fantasyland, then he's a good person to just look at his artwork. And if you want to draw that stuff, he's also a good person to look at.
Sketching is definitely something I have been meaning to learn more about as well. Although in my case, it's more of the drafting end of things, but definitely kind of like you, John, I don't feel like I know how to draw at all. I just don't have the same insecurities about it.
And I've thought to myself, oh, I should learn how to draw and sketch for my blacksmithing, and perhaps I will at some point. But the stuff I'm doing right now, like I said, it is for me. It is a meditative practice.
Yeah. Mm.
Cool. Yeah. And I think it is really important to have something for yourself, something that you can enjoy doing, even though you might be bad at it. And maybe even better, that's something you don't feel the need to share with the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I still need to say mine.
What's your focus? You don't get to get out of this.
No, I'm very unfocused. That's my focus. I need to focus. I've been really enjoying a quote unquote new podcast, which is surprising to everybody because who listens to podcasts like I do? What Now with Trevor Noah?
Yeah.
So after he quit at the Daily Show, he has been doing a lot more touring around the world, going back to his stand-up stuff. But as a part of that, he started his own podcast. His first guest was Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Okay.
And I think that sort of says enough about the level he starts at when he's doing this podcast. Because it is fucking good, and it's really interesting, and it's really fascinating. And he has a variety of different people on. Half of the episodes, or maybe not fully half, is just him chatting with his friends. Mm-hmm. And it is just fun, lighthearted, and interesting.
Yeah.
But then you have these deep, really interesting conversations, like with John, with The Rock. And then also he has Sam Altman on talking AI. He got Bill Gates on. He has Kevin Hart on and Idris Elba. And then most recently, I saw that he had Orlando Bloom on as well. So it's like, and a lot of other people that I care less about, but it is, I think he's really, really good. I think he's able to ask really, really good questions.
Yeah.
And give a little bit of pushback. But then also it's just really fascinating how, quote unquote, this funny kid from South Africa is suddenly able to invite Bill Gates on for one-on-one conversation. Yeah. I just find that to be really amazing.
Indeed.
So I have not listened to the podcast yet. It's actually on my TBL list. But I did watch him quite a bit when he was on TV and doing the Daily Show. And I think he's an extremely strong interviewer. So he can be very funny, but then he can veer away from the chuckles and laughs and get into more serious stuff. And he's very comfortable talking about the awkward and the serious and the more grave subject matter.
Very much so. I would recommend starting with the episode with Rock, just because that's such a good and powerful episode. But after that, just listen to whatever, I'd say.
If you can also watch his one-man show, he has a bit about France, because he is explaining how his travels went, and this bit about buying clothing in France was very accurate. So, have a look.
Yeah. What Now with Trevor Noah.
Okay. Perfect.
Any last little tidbits?
Last episode of Shogun is out. Go watch Shogun. It's a very good show.
It is. That I have watched. That is very good.
You will learn a lot about Japan, and if you don't understand the show, send me a text. I would explain it.
But you will need to tell Red, explain this in 3 minutes or less, or he will not stop.
I can do that. I can do that.
Yeah, but people need to tell you to do that.
Yes.
John, where can people do some friendly stalking?
Well, if they want to stalk me, they can go on most of the social medias and the web and search for John D. Harvey, D as in David, or they can look for JDH Metalcraft. So one or the other will get you to me, and typically my avatar is my giant beardy face. So you will probably recognize me pretty quickly. If it's not my big beardy face, it is the logo that Al from Fools with Tools designed.
Yes. All right.
Cool.
And if you want to get a hold of us collectively, you can do that at Two Thirds Focused on any of the mostly social places. And you can find me at Rasmus Lewin and lewinsmeer.no.
And you can find me at Dorit Smith or Red Smith everywhere on the internet, most specifically at doritsmith.com.
And maybe you can find Jan back here next week.
Maybe.
But until then,
if we allow him to come back.
It's a big if. Thank you, John, for being on.
I'm not busy next week. I mean, you know.
Yeah, cool.
Yes, please. Great.
You heard that, Jan? You got competition now.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure to have a chat with you.
No problem. It's great talking with you guys as well.
Thank you very much. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Have a good week.
Bye.